Devices Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Pulse of Bodybuilding and Fitness. I'm Scott McNally, and with me, as always, is the host of this show, Dave, the Pulsinator. Pulsinella, what's up, man? How you been?
The Pulsinator. Dude, that name, I love that name. It stuck with me since 2003 when the announcer, the MC for the Delaware, announced me as that, and it's never gone away.
So good. So good.
Probably my favorite nickname other than Pussy Smeller. Dave Pussy Smeller, which was my nickname in high school.
Ooh, huh.
Isn't that awful?
That's going to be a story in itself, I'm sure.
Dave Pussy Smeller in high school. I hadn't smelled one pussy yet. Not one. So it wasn't even an accurate nickname yet.
Man. So we have a special guest today. I don't know if we can call him a guest, almost like, I'm going to say, hopefully like a resident guest, resident co-host type thing. Does that sound about right? Does that sound better, maybe? Something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. We got Mike Pulsinella, your brother. What's up, Mike? Thanks for being here.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. So we talked so much about your movie last week. And, you know, when Dave and I started the show, we made the mistake of, like, not telling everybody who Dave was out the gate. So last week, we stepped back and we did what I'm going to say was the Mike Pulsinella thing to do, which is... like think about your audience, and we realized not everybody knew Dave, and there's a lot of people, you know, the old school guys from like Project Bodybuilding that have been following along with these podcasts forever, but we do have a new audience. And so instead of just like jumping into the show and just, cause I know Dave had a bunch of stuff go on this week that we want to get to all of that. But before we do,
I know, but before you do, because it's definitely important that people understand where Dave comes from in terms of the Raising the Bar video series, and that's kind of what brought him to fame.
Yes.
But I thought it also would be important to let him fill in his technical background with diet and nutrition.
Oh, so you're saying I missed something, basically, is what you're telling
me. I think you still miss something.
I don't even know who I am. I'm Raising the Bar guy, right?
Yeah, you're right. Good. That's a good point. That's valid.
Or the Six Foods That Work guy.
But I'm looking at it from the point of a new listener who's hearing this guy give diet and exercise and nutrition advice. You know, I would want to know what are his credentials in that area.
Well, if this is video, you could flex right now, Dave. You could be like, "These are my credentials here." But that's not it though, right? Yeah. What should we be asking him, Mike? Like technically, like are you educated basically right. first, right? What?
And I happen to know he is, so that's why I'm sort of leading this question down that path.
It's all bro science, dude. It's all anecdotal evidence. No, I actually do have an education in this shit. National Academy of Sports Medicine, first and foremost. Exercise program design and human nutrition, clinical nutrition, sports nutrition. Good stuff.
That's NASM, right?
I have to ask this because the question just came to my mind. What do you think is the proportion of book learning versus that experiential anecdotal evidence that you now utilize on a daily basis? Is it 50-50?
That's a good question. So in other words, if I had to put a percentage on the amount of knowledge that I use on a daily basis that I acquired through just doing it versus the book – I would say 90-10.
Really?
Think about this. I've had an opportunity, a unique opportunity, for 25 years to be constantly conducting pretty controlled experiments in my office with my clients. My scientific experiments are about as controlled, I would say, as any other study. Because when you have a study, you're just using human beings, right, as the control.
Yeah.
They put them on a specific diet for 6 weeks. And how do they know? And they have them keep a journal, right? Those people could be lying on their journals as well as anybody else could. So I think if I have a personal connection with these clients, they're probably writing down the truth in their journal. And therefore, ergo, I have a controlled environment within which to conduct my experiments. So I have a lot of anecdotal evidence, but if the same thing happens 200 times in a row.
Yeah.
When I apply A, B, and C, then A, B, and C are probably doing it, and I can go ahead and say that it's a fact.
There are many factors that figure into the reliability of the results of a study, and one of those, one of the biggest ones, is the N, the number of people that were in the study. And sometimes it's only 10, 15, 20, 50. You've had, what, hundreds? Thousands?
Oh, thousands, dude, thousands.
So your N is very high.
My N is very high, absolutely. And usually, for the things that they're trying to study that apply to bodybuilding, like meal frequency and things like that, the studies don't run long enough. Like, I always knew that meal frequency had some great effects on metabolism. I don't know how, and I don't know why, and I don't know the chemistry behind it. I can't break it down to the molecular level. I can't do that. But I know one thing, that if I ate a solid food meal every 2 hours, after about 12 weeks or so, I couldn't keep enough food in my body to keep me full. I was burning through it. I was up to 7,000 calories for my cutting diet at my last show. So I don't know what you want to – you might call it speeding up the metabolism. You can call whatever the hell you want. But I knew – that every time I did that or had someone else do it, it worked. However, the studies that all of the science bodybuilders were pointing to were like 6 week studies or 3 week studies. That's just not long enough. You know what I mean? To have that effect happen.
Right.
It's flawed.
I've got a question for you from one coach to another. You've done this obviously a lot longer than I have. You mentioned, you said, that, you know, if your people, like, because, and I do think you maybe even probably can get better statistics because you are in close contact with your clients and you, you know, you're probably going, just through that experience, they're probably more likely to follow the plan. But, of course, there are people that don't follow the plan. And sometimes they don't tell you right away. Listen, exactly. One of the things that I still have a hard time with are if somebody isn't following the plan, it can take me. It can take me a little while, several weeks or longer, to really figure it out. That no, because I always think like, okay, I assume they're following the plan. So if this isn't working, then what am I doing wrong as a coach? That's what I ask myself.
Always, I do the same thing.
Well, how long? My fault. How long does it take you before you can like really you can sniff that out?
That period of time has gotten shorter over the years.
Okay.
Honestly, I know that I prescribed A and B, and that should equal C at the end of the week. Now, obviously, there are a lot of physical variables that can interfere with that happening, like a woman's cycle making them hold water, things like that, a thousand things like that. I know that. But the trend should be, you know, I can pretty much expect what's going to happen. When someone comes in and they tell me they followed everything, and for 2 weeks in a row, the numbers, or 3 weeks in a row, the numbers aren't moving, they're lying to me. And it may be some peripheral little thing that they're not, they're just not thinking of, or maybe they are thinking of, and they don't think it matters, or maybe they know it matters, and they just don't want to tell me. A lot of the times, people don't want to, quote unquote, let me down. But I'll tell you, the best way to let me down is by lying to me in the office and making me think it's me.
Yeah.
That is bullshit.
I was 100%, you know, bro.
Own it, and we can figure out why you're doing it and fix it. Plus, it doesn't matter what comes out of your mouth. The scale and calipers tell me otherwise.
Okay.
They just do.
Yeah. Mike, are there any other questions I haven't asked Dave?
This is actually much more of an introduction to Dave than I thought we were going to do. But that's what I love about this show, is that we just go with the flow. We were going to do like some funny anecdotes we had talked about, but then we ended up getting like deep into the science of bodybuilding. That's what I think is great about this.
Yeah, so true.
So conversely, I used a big word. Do you guys like that? I think that we should take a minute to introduce Mike, so that everybody can know who he is, because you know, guys like myself, like I said, people who are listening to Project Bodybuilding, people who have watched all the Raising the Bar films and all the stuff after that, there's a lot of us that know who you are, but I don't want to assume that everybody does. So now I'm going to put it this way. Okay. So Dave said he didn't want to talk about himself. So to start us out, Mike, I'm not going to ask you to talk about yourself. I'm going to ask your brother to tell me a little bit about you.
I want
to
hear this.
There, I put you on the spot.
He, um, he filmed me for raising the bar, and he works at MHP.
Okay, Mike, let's let you take over.
To someone who doesn't know what raising the bar is, you're terrible at this.
Oh, that was the whole idea, wasn't it? No, Mike really needs to tell you who he is. He really does.
I think I can synopsize this very easily.
Okay.
My brother was a bodybuilder his whole life. I decided I wanted to try and make a documentary. I had never done it before. I was not a filmmaker. I did it with my brother as he was preparing for a contest, and it turned out really great, partially due to him and partially due to me. We worked very well together. And because of that, we were able to make actually four documentaries in this series that we called Raising the Bar about Dave's progression through the world of bodybuilding at an advanced age, starting at like 37 years old. And he was working to try to get his pro card in his 40s. And that's what the saga of Raising the Bar 1, 2, and 3 is about. That's sort of how I came to fame. And people started to notice my work. Through that, I got a job with MHP and Muscle Meds, which are sister companies. And I got to work with Victor Martinez and Kai Greene and did a bunch of DVDs with Kai Greene and videos that have been really popular. And so that's kind of my resume at this point, is that I've done Raising the Bar and all these videos with Kai Greene and Victor Martinez, all of which can be seen on my YouTube page, the Mike Pulcinella YouTube page. Guys, they're still all there. Still get a lot of views. The Kai Greene video that I made with him called A Day in the Life of the Bodybuilder just surpassed 5 million views. I'm very proud of that.
Because it's really good.
That was so good. Yeah, that was so good.
Proud to say. That's amazing to me. I remember when we first started posting videos and I was like, oh, look, 30,000 views, 35,000 views. Now 5 million? That just blows my mind.
That is mind-blowing. And guys, that's going to be in our show notes to go to Mike's YouTube page. So check that out for sure. And also, I know Dave wants to talk about this video that RX Muscle did with Kai. We're going to talk about that a little bit later tonight. So I'm super glad that we have you here, because you, out of anybody I know, literally, I thought about it, anybody I know, you've had the most like one-on-one first-person contact with Kai. So your insight is going to be awesome with that. But tell us a little bit more about that, because that was such a cool project.
Well, that was proposed by Muscle Meds, and I think, was it Flex Online? I forget who the co-sponsor was. But they basically wanted me to do A Day in the Life of a Bodybuilder featuring Kai Greene. And he was really coming up at that time. We ended up producing a three video series, because there's just so much material with Kai. It also took 4 days over the course of a month to create a day in the life, a typical day in the life. So it's not actually accurate. Not all of the things that we show happened in one day, but you know, you play with the truth a little bit in this kind of thing.
Okay.
And basically I was just allowed to hang with him and see what he does in a typical day and try to translate that onto the screen. The main thing that I wanted to do with Kai Greene was to sort of help him refine his message. He had this very positive message that I saw that I didn't think he was communicating very well in some other videos that I had seen. And what I wanted to do is help him clarify it, edit it down, and really put forth this positive message of, you know, thoughts become things. That's his big thing. And I feel like I did that with that three video series, A Day in the Life.
You know, I remember you saying something, and this was back right around the time you had created that, because Kai was doing, you know, other video things. I can't remember whether it was with Flex or maybe it was when he was with MD, but he did like these cardio confessionals, and, you know, he had like the bloodshot eye. He was just, you know, on the stepper, and it was just like 30 minutes of him just rambling. And one thing you said is that he's got a lot to say, but you can't just like leave the camera rolling. You have to know like how to cut it together. And that's what I think you did with that so well.
Well, it took me a while to figure out what he was actually trying to say. Right. So I would try to figure out what he was trying to say with a particular speech. And I would just let the camera roll for a half an hour or whatever.
Yeah.
And then at the end of it, I would say, well, what was his point? And I would end up taking a little bit of him and maybe add a little bit of my voiceover and then back to him and then a visual, and to try to put together, you know, the point he was trying to make in a way that could get through to people in only a few minutes rather than a half an hour.
Interesting. You know, just overall, I think as an artist, to be able to be successful with a piece of work and then be celebrated by having people say, hey, I want, like, people didn't say like, oh, hey, now come and shoot this. Like, you know, I went to school for photography and it would be great to have people say, hey, like, you know, shoot in your style. But instead, most of the time what you get are job offerings that like, okay, shoot this cowboy for a Marlboro cigarette ad. And it's not your thing. After that, you have had the opportunity to use your style, the Mike Pulcinella style, countless times, right?
Actually, no.
No?
I mean, not really. I mean, I have been hired for a lot of different projects.
Okay.
Based on the work that I have done.
Okay.
And then I was not allowed to work the way I want to work.
What do you mean?
Honest. Very honest. If you watch the Raising the Bar series, especially the Raising the Bar series with my brother, we showed some things about injuries, about personal relationships. His relationship with his girlfriend was falling apart, and they both let me film that. They're fighting in it. Most couples would say, turn off the camera. They didn't. Subsequently, when I was hired for other projects and things like that happened, I was shut down. I had one subject became addicted to drugs and then had to break that cycle before going to a contest. I was not allowed to shoot that.
Oh,
I had another subject start to tell me about the problem his father was having with his health and crying on camera. And when by the time I got home, he had called and left a message. You can't use any of that.
Oh, geez.
So time after time, I was confronted with people.
Stuff.
Right. All the best stuff. Time after time, I've been confronted. So when people ask me, why aren't you making more bodybuilding documentaries? And I'm asked all the time, literally every day, I get some kind of comment or message somewhere. Please make more bodybuilding documentaries like the ones you've made. I don't have the heart to say there are no subjects who are deserving of this kind of attention because they keep shutting me down.
Can I say this? The problem with shooting bodybuilders for videos of the ilk that you produce is that their egos are so humongous, they can't allow anyone to see them in a weak moment.
Okay.
All they really end up wanting is a fluff piece. But that's not what you do. And the odd thing is that bodybuilder X will see Raising the Bar 1 and be like, that's great. And all the things he loves it for, which is what you show all the ups and downs, the ins and outs and the crap that I went through, and he'll want something done about him, but he wants none of the bad stuff. How many times has that happened to you?
So many times. I don't think it's specific to bodybuilders. I just think it's people in general.
Human beings in general.
And I apologize to anyone who is a fan of Raising the Bar and has heard me in interviews before, because I'm going to say this same thing again. Mm-hmm. We cannot appreciate your triumph unless we've seen you crawl up out of the gutter.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Let me give you another example. A guy was going to do a Brazilian jiu-jitsu competition. He does this every year. He gets himself in shape and he goes to Brazil. He was going to get me in this thing. We're going to go to Brazil. And I hadn't heard from him for a while. And then I finally see him at the gym. And he goes, oh, sorry. You know, my dad died and I had to have heart surgery. I was standing in front of the mirror looking at my body and just weeping the other day.
Oh,
and
I said,
why didn't you call me? Oh, no. I want to get in a little better shape before we can. No, you missed the point.
I don't want
to start with you halfway up the mountain
and
then show you at the top of the mountain. We needed to start with you crying in front of a fucking mirror. What about that do you not get?
What about you gets this? Like, why are you different?
I don't know. I wish I could give you an answer. I just remember having taken off 6 months from training and diet and everything, right? And we're starting this filming for Raising the Bar 3, and my brother's in the kitchen, and he's filming me eating some shit. You know, I haven't started my prep yet, but I'm wearing a baggy button down. And he's like, you know, your starting point, what is your start? And I'm like, well, I'll show you. And I took my shirt off and I had cellulite on my tits and a apron belly. And I stood there in my kitchen. I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with the scene.
I remember.
And I stand there and I do a 360 And I'm like, my job over the next 6 months is to take this pile of crap and turn it into a physique worthy of a pro card. Go. You know, I just, for some reason, had no problem. Maybe it's because it's my brother and I'm very comfortable with him. But no, I just think it's you. I just never had a problem with him showing me at my worst moments because I knew at some point he'd also be showing me in my best.
Mm. Yeah, you had faith. Out in the watch. You had faith in that process that you were going to put together and what you believed in. Yeah.
Actually, I knew where I'd end up. I knew in 24 weeks after that kitchen scene, I knew what I would look like, and I knew I was going to win the North Americans again.
Yeah.
And thusly, I did.
Yeah, that's
so
huge.
I had no, and not, another thing is, Scott, after a while, the camera almost becomes invisible. You're not aware of it anymore. At least you shouldn't be. So after he had been filming me for 1, 2, and 3, you become completely unaware that you're being filmed. And you are completely at ease. At least you should be. At least I was, anyway. I can only speak for myself. But he just can't seem to, Mike can't seem to get that from anybody else, ever, fucking ever.
Well, you even talked about that in the first Kai Greene video, right, Mike?
Remind me.
So, well, Kai and Oscar kind of shut you out. They didn't. Mm-hmm. They didn't give you the access you wanted.
Yes, that is true. For what ended up being the DVD Overkill.
Yes, that
was
one.
About Kai Greene going to the Olympia for the first time in 2009. Mm. You see in the video itself, in the DVD itself, which is now also online on my YouTube page, in Overkill, you could see me in Las Vegas trying to get the contact with them. I wanted to be embedded with them, and they were resisting it. They honestly didn't understand what I was trying to do. They just thought it was like another, muscular development video where they send somebody, he spends an hour with them at the gym, and that's a video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wanted to be in the room with them. And Oscar was saying, you don't want to be in the room where somebody takes a shit and the other guy has to smell it. Yeah, I do. That is what I want.
But Mike, it had never been done before. They had no frame of reference.
Right. So in the follow-up to Overkill, which was called Redemption, I did have Oscar talking about, wow, when we saw Overkill, we realized what you were trying to do, and we apologized. They actually did call me afterwards after they saw the finished piece and said, sorry, we didn't give you better access. We will in the future. And they did for the next one.
That's great.
This is now this is an interesting aspect about you, Mike, and we've talked about this off the air, that you are part of the fitness industry. You do lift weights. I've seen you get into good shape, but you don't consider yourself a bodybuilder, right?
No, I've never considered myself a bodybuilder. I don't have the drive that you guys have to make myself really big and to really push myself that way. And at this point, I'm 57 years old. I mean, I feel like I'm more about preserving my health and my joints. But let's talk about a few years ago, maybe in my 40s, where I could have done that and was encouraged to. I just didn't have that nugget, Mike, of drive that you guys have.
The bottom line is that you're just not crazy enough.
He's too balanced.
I truly believe, like, bodybuilding at its core, like the most hardcore bodybuilders, it comes from a place of imbalance. It just really does. You have to have something off about you to want to do that to yourself for decades. You just do.
And here's the thing. The deeper I got into bodybuilding, the more I understood about it and understood what it takes. When people would say to me, why don't you do it? I would say, because I know what it takes to do this. There are people that enter into it in a naive sort of way. And I think, Dave, you get this all the time. And maybe you too, Scott, where people come to you and they go, I want to be an IFBB pro.
Oh, yeah.
And they've never lifted a weight in their lives. They have no idea what it even means to be a bodybuilder. Well, I know what it means to be a bodybuilder. And that's why I don't want to do it.
Oh, you've seen it. You saw it up close. But even you, having lived with me for so many years and grew up with me, you still didn't quite get it until you followed me around for the entire prep. You were even shocked at what I had to do. Like for instance, how frequently I ate, it was almost like I was constantly eating. You never realized that. Hmm. And until you see it, saying the words, I eat every 2 hours, and then seeing someone actually eat every 2 hours, are two completely different things.
Hmm. And structure their day around that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Raising the Bar 1, the very first one, was all about, was me learning all of that stuff.
Yeah.
It's so interesting.
That's my resume. I guess that's a good introduction to me. That's where I come from. That's what I did to be a part of this world.
Well, you know, one more thing on that, too. It's an interesting perspective because, in a way, then, you are an outsider. So if I were to shoot a bodybuilding documentary and Dave were eat every 2 hours, I would just see that as normal. But you, exactly. you're almost like, I guess, and I think I've heard you call it this, almost like you're like the curious outsider who's able to pick those things up because it's not your normal every day.
Definitely, definitely. There are certain things that you as a bodybuilder, if you were making a documentary, might not even consider putting in because to you it's normal, quote unquote.
Normal, right.
So the other side of that coin, though, is also that there's a certain reverence for bodybuilders that other bodybuilders have. So people would say to me when I went to work with Kai Greene, oh my God, what was it like being around Kai Greene? I didn't care. Yeah, I mean, he's big and all, but that's not important to me. Yeah, I wanted to learn who this person was and why he was doing what he was doing, but I wasn't in awe of him. Okay. And I think that if you're in awe of something, you're not the right person to go and make a documentary about it.
Interesting.
You need to be detached and removed from that thing, whatever it is.
Interesting. So you're still seated in the fitness industry, though. You said that, you know, there might not be an everyday calling for the films that you make, but what are you doing now? Because I know you've done a lot of stuff with MHP, and you've gotten more into, like, the social media side of stuff, right?
Absolutely. You know, through these videos, I've gotten a full-time job with MHP.
Nice.
And it has morphed from making a lot of these documentary-style videos to more social media stuff. I mean, we still do little videos here and there, some training things that I try to approach in a documentary sort of way. But it's basically a lot of social media. You know, MHP is coming back with new products. I don't know if people realize that MHP was sort of, you know, off the market for a while, and now we're back and hopefully even stronger. And so my focus is helping MHP, you know, regain the strength it once had.
Who runs MHP again? I forget. I'm sorry.
MHP is run by Gerard Dente. He created it like in his basement in the 90s. He was a bodybuilder who was like, these are the things that I would want that I don't see in the market. And so he created, you know, a range of products that has continued to grow. At one point, though, he had a board of trustees that actually voted him out of the company. This was about 3 years ago.
What?
This is what happened. They voted him.
Only in bodybuilding.
He didn't have a controlling interest in his own company, and they voted him out.
Huh.
New management came in. I think they were well-intentioned, but I felt like they didn't understand bodybuilding. They were trying to make us into sort of a generic fitness company, and it just wasn't working. I stayed through the whole thing. Gerard bought his way back in, basically, and that management left, and now we're back to the old school, the old style. We're bringing back old products like Dark Matter that people love,
nice.
And he's back to creating some new stuff, which is really exciting.
Nice. I know MHP is always. I'm sorry. What?
Yeah, but it was quite a behind the scenes story that nobody knew what was going on.
Yeah, I had no idea about that. And I was going to say, I know MHP was always real tight with bodybuilding, but they do a lot of. They were doing at least a lot of strongman stuff too.
Yes, yes. And we're slowly getting back into strongman. We're actually branching out into MMA. I've been working with some MMA fighters, doing some little videos with them. You know, female MMA fighters who are incredibly awesome, and all sorts of things. We still do want to be a more wide ranging company, but you know, bodybuilding is our bread and butter. It's our base. It's our customer base, and we gotta attend to that.
Will you be back at the Arnold this upcoming year?
I believe so. Yeah, I think we're gonna have a booth at the Arnold like we always do.
Yes. Hey, Dave, I got a chance to meet Mike a couple years back. We had like a bodybuilding nerds meetup, and this was like I think the second year BNR was out, and we had like it was a small group. We had like 25 people that all showed up in our bodybuilding nerd shirts, and Mike was at the MHP booth, which was like just down the same aisle, but you know, 200 feet, which took a half hour to walk, and he came over and said hi. We took a bunch of pictures and stuff.
That was
that's
a nice
so
moment.
Cute.
It was a nice moment to see in person these people you only see online.
It was cool.
And I saw that picture of you and I, Scott, where we met at that time, and I have no memory of it.
2011, bro.
And you called it too. You're like, I know you don't remember meeting me, but here's a picture of when you met me. I'm like, yeah, Scott, dude, no memory.
So, in speaking of it being a long time, uh-huh. It's been a while since we recorded. What's been going on, man? How you been?
Good. And speaking of, I'm glad you brought that up, because speaking of the last time we recorded,
yes,
I've been thinking about this a lot. I know you remember when I recorded with you about a year ago, when I said you had asked me about training and diet, and I told you, honestly, Scott, I don't like training. I don't like it at all. I do it as a means to an end.
You upset so many people that day, Dave.
And that stuck with me, right?
Yeah.
So I was thinking about it and thinking about it, and I realized something.
Uh-oh.
It's not fucking true.
Huh? What?
It's not true. Listen. Let me say this. I've been doing this so long now. In fact, this year, right, is my 40th year in the gym. So I sat back and I thought about this for a second. I've been working out for 40 years. When I answered that question on your podcast, I was answering it based on like the last decade or so and how I thought about the last decade. But then I put myself back in my teenage brain and my early and mid and late 20s brain and even my 30s brain. And I thought to myself, dude, you used to love training. Me and Steve used to be in the gym for 3 hours.
Steve Fulcinella, your cousin, the strongman.
My cousin, the strongman, yeah. We would be in Ryan's gym for hours, like working pecs for 3 hours with every exercise known to mankind for that body part. And that lasted for a long time. But when you asked me that question, I really hadn't remembered a time when I felt that way about it. So my knee-jerk reaction was to say, yeah, I don't like training. At this point, and maybe since I retired from competition, that's the case because of aches and pains, because of injury, because of the fact that, you know, I'm not competing anymore, and it's hard to find the why. You know what I mean? Like, why am I doing this? Why am I busting my ass in the gym? Why am I eating every 2 hours? I know why. It's to look a certain way at this point. It doesn't matter if I compete. But I've had a love affair with bodybuilding for decades. I just haven't, in the last day, I've just been doing this for half a century, dude.
That makes sense.
I wanted to clear that up because that's important to me to get across to you. And I know that it upset you a lot.
I didn't sleep. I haven't slept well since then.
Because Mike brought up an analogy. He goes, and I'm like, I don't understand. I said, I don't understand why that upsets people. You know, I'm a bodybuilder. I'm bringing the finished product to the stage, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he goes, Chick Corea is a jazz musician that I love and my brother and I have loved since childhood. Okay. We're passionate about his music, right? So Mike said, how would you feel if all of a sudden you found out that Chick Corea doesn't really like playing music, but he just does?
Yeah.
I said, wow.
Huh.
It would devastate me. And I finally got it. I got it. I understood.
That was a good analogy, Mike.
It was a really good analogy.
I know, right?
I get it. Yeah. It's probably like the same thing when somebody wins a bodybuilding show and they're known as like a quote unquote lazy trainer, you know,
right.
You never get behind that guy. You're like, well, he didn't even really have to work to get there.
Exactly. Flex Wheeler was that. It was a claim. He just went through the motions. And I gotta be honest. I was in Venice for 1 week. I worked out at Venice Gold's for 1 week and he really didn't do shit.
Like when was that?
19
oh, the previous century.
1998.
Ooh, that was a good era.
It was a great era. But he was there doing pretty much nothing.
What was it like there then?
Rico McClinton. Dude, it was like walking into Muscle and Fitness magazine.
God, that would be cool.
It was the most amazing experience. Truthfully, everyone who was anyone was there. Remember the Barbarian Twins?
Oh, of course.
They were training. I actually did legs with JJ Walker, you know?
Yeah. No kidding.
I did back one day. Are you ready for this? I did back with Craig Titus.
Oh, wow. What was that like? I've listened to probably every podcast you've ever done, Dave. I have never heard this.
I never spoke about it.
Holy shit.
I walked into the gym. I was doing back. He just happened to be doing back. And we just said, hey, want to do the back together? We'll get it together. And I remember pulling exactly as much weight as he did on the close grip pull downs for just as many reps. I think I beat him in one set. Actually, I was so proud of that.
Wow.
But that is my forte. Those row downs are my thing, you know. Yeah. I was doing the 300-pound stack for 20, 25 reps. But I had a great back work. It was one of the best workouts I ever had because I was working out with Craig Titus, you know. But it was really cool. Everyone who was anyone was in there. Lou Ferrigno was there. I can't even remember half the people, but it was just crazy. Amazing. I didn't want to leave.
What were you doing out there? Go ahead, Dave.
I have to add this old man thing and emphasize to people that at that time, pre-internet, you weren't inundated with material with these people. You didn't feel connected to their lives. The only thing you had were the magazines.
Good point.
That's it.
And that to walk into this gym was like walking into a fantasy land.
Yeah.
It was nothing like what we had.
Exactly that. And all the chicks, all the Rachel McLeish was there. All those girls, like all the female bodybuilders who were like hot as hell back then, they were there. I was like, I'm gonna work out all day.
Holy shit.
I understand now why they worked out all day.
What were you doing there?
The company I had just started doing my nutrition at Gold's Gym, and we had just aligned ourselves with a product company called Apex. I don't know if you remember them.
I remember that name.
Apex was a supplement line, and we went out there. A bunch of us flew out there to spend a week at the Apex Labs seeing how they made the product and learning a lot about the product and doing that. It was pretty cool. But obviously, you know, we did that from, you know, until 3 p.m, and then the rest of the day, we had to do whatever we wanted, and just that's what we did.
That is so cool.
It just worked out at Gold's Venice. And I also went to Worlds one day, too, which was also a hub.
Yeah.
That was really cool, yeah.
And you, like, hung out at the firehouse and went to the beach. You just, like, did the whole bro thing.
Did all that. I went to Muscle Beach. It was exactly as you see it. The outdoor pen and all that. It was crazy. I'm like, I can't believe I'm here. That's so cool. People live here.
Yeah. Now, have you been there since?
Negative.
Okay. I was there last year.
I have not. Were you?
I did. I'm an average guy. I'd consider myself. I'm not a guy. I have no illusions of turning pro, but I thought to myself, you know what would be fun? Instead of doing the same shows that I always do, what if I went and did a show in California? And so I looked at the schedule and I saw the Titan Classic lined up with my time frame, and I got an Airbnb like two blocks from Gold's. And I flew out a week early, and I got
so smart.
Oh, dude, it was so cool. And I got to like hang out and see friends and, you know, do my cardio and my depletion workouts at Gold. It was not like that. It was not like that at all. Everything you've described, it was very different. There were some cool people, but it was a different vibe, and it's not a place that I would want to train on a regular basis, honestly.
Really?
You know what? You could probably get into it, and there are serious people there, but it's not the place that you are describing.
It was like a snapshot of that era. Like everyone who was anyone in that chunk of time happened to be in that building that week. Maybe it was a fluke. I don't know.
I did see Brad Rowe. He was doing a leg workout because he trains people there all day long. So he was like busting out legs intensely at like 5:30 in the morning.
I don't even know who he is. I'm sorry.
Okay, he's a good pro. He's a good pro.
Is he really?
Yeah, yeah. He's you know, he's not like one of your top tier type guys, but he's.
How does he turn pro?
Oh, what do you mean?
What show did he turn pro?
Oh, you know what? I'm not even sure to tell you the truth.
Okay.
That's bad on me, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know. He's also an actor and stuff, and him and his wife are both very popular in the fitness industry. And he was shooting like an Instagram video like after his workout, talk about like the product that he was using. You know, it was very, very not 1998.
So do you feel better about that? now that I've actually answered the question honestly. For the first 25 years, I was passionate about it. Would spend all day at the gym, just like anyone else. It's just I was looking at the last decade, and truthfully, dude, I don't care how much you love something. If you do it all the time, every day, for 40 years, it might lose some of its luster, especially if it hurts your body to do it.
Yes, yeah, you start tearing things.
You know what I'm saying?
That was a good response. I like that. Because it was interesting because it was on an episode of Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott mm-hmm. Stevenson, and my jaw dropped. And then everybody on the thread and stuff was like, I can't believe Dave doesn't like training anymore or doesn't like training. And I wrote it off. You know, I had my reasons. I was like, well, he's a diet guy. He's the six foods guy and all that.
I am that too. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But, that's the truth of the matter is that, I just wasn't thinking. It was a knee-jerk response to how I felt about it since I've retired.
Yeah.
And I'm still doing, think about it, Scott. I started doing this in 1979, dude. And I'm not talking about dabbling in it. I never dabbled in it. Like, from day one, I was doing squats so I cried in my basement at 13 years old. Mike, you know this.
I watched it.
Yeah.
From day one. I watched it happen.
There was nothing casual about it. So I'm talking about busting my ass. For 40 years, this year is the 40th year. So I have to love it on some level, Scott, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, yeah. And I guess that's probably what was kind of confusing about it to a lot of people,
I get it. I totally get it.
But so catch me up. What's been going on? Like I said, we haven't talked in a little while here. Tell me about life in Dave's world.
Well, this happened yesterday, okay?
Okay.
So I needed some groceries. So I was going to make a short run. I always need some groceries. I never need no groceries.
Yes, I know
there's
that.
There's never a time when I need no groceries. I always am running out of fucking something.
Yeah, me too.
So I had a list of five or six things, and I went to the Acme, which is 5 minutes away. And I did my shopping and also got a Christmas card while I was there. And I put everything in my cart and I paid for everything. Went to the car, loaded it all up. I came home, unpacked everything. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm like, where's the card?
Oh, no.
I'm looking around the card's not here, right? So mind you, at this point in time, I'm standing in my kitchen in nothing but a T-shirt, my boxer briefs, and no shoes or socks.
Okay, sexy.
Okay, you have this vision in your head, right? You have it pictured? Okay. So anyway, I'm thinking, it must be in my trunk. I must have just left it in the trunk because it's in its own little bag, and I just probably didn't think to grab it. So I was like, I don't want to put pants and shoes and socks on. I'm just going to run out to the car. 5 seconds. Dude, 5 seconds, right?
Yeah.
5 seconds. Open the trunk. Grab the card. Run back in the house before anybody sees me. Right?
Easy sounds easy to me.
Does it not sound easy?
Absolutely.
So I run out to the car, and I open the trunk, and the fucking card's not in there.
Okay, that's not good.
Automatically, dude, it automatically dawned on me exactly what happened. I'm like, fuck, you left it in the cart. Because at that moment, I had a flash, and I remember seeing it. In the cart, and I remember thinking it was a coupon or something.
Oh yeah.
And I left it there, and I put the cart back under the canopy thing where it goes with all the rest of the carts, and I drove away. And I'm thinking, fuck, that's where it is. It is in that cart. So I thought for a second, I have every second that is ticking is a second that someone could be grabbing that cart
yes.
and getting my card, right? So I'm like, I do not want to run back into that house and put pants on shoes inside. I don't want to. So I just hopped in my car.
Oh, no.
With my box of briefs.
You're kidding me.
Wait, hear me out.
Because you're thinking you're going to swoop it up, just scoop it up, right?
Exactly. This is the plan. I'm going to drive into the parking lot. I'm going to pull right up to the canopy where the carts are. I'm going to get out of the driver's side, walk 2 feet. Grab the card, jump back in the car, done deal, right?
I feel like this is leading to an arrest and sex offender status.
Right,
but go ahead.
It should have led to all that.
Go ahead.
So I get to the parking lot and I pull up to the canopy all the carts are gone.
Oh!
So the employee had dragged the carts back into the Acme. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I'm like, I've come too far now. I've come too far. I'm getting this card. I parked the car. I walked from the car all the way to the Acme in my underwear and no shoes and socks.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I owned the place. You have to do it like nothing's wrong. Like, here's the thing. You have to do it like you're not doing anything wrong.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Like you're not doing anything wrong. You just do it. You act normal, and those around you are going to have to accept you as normal because you are in that moment accepting yourself as normal.
Yeah.
And also, if you're doing it fast enough, it takes people a while to register and then have process and have a reaction. And by that time, you could be in and gone.
Yeah, you got your card by then.
Exactly. So I walk into the Acme. I walk up to where the carts are. I'm looking through all the carts that are in the line, and I don't see it in any of the carts. I'm like, God damn it, I have to ask somebody now.
Mm-hmm.
So I was still at that point. I was thinking, like, this one in the Acme, I can grab it out of the cart. I'll be out of there before anyone sees me. I won't have to converse with anyone. No one will know. I will not have to interact with any other human beings. And I'll be gone. A few people might see me. They might not process it at first. I'll be fine. No luck. I have to talk to somebody now. So I go up to the guy who's standing there. I'm like, these carts, they were just dragged in here. And I had a card in there. And he's looking me up and down. And he goes,
of course he is.
Yeah. It's at the service desk. We brought it back to the service desk. And I look over at the service desk. And there's about 5 people in line at the service desk. So I'm like,
come on, you had to have bailed at this.
I'm like, fuck it, I'm in now.
Holy shit.
I go to the service desk and I wait in line in my boxer briefs and no shoes and socks. Everyone's staring at me. I don't care if they're staring. I'm getting the goddamn card back. I am getting it back. I finally get up to the front and they have my card. I grab it. I walk out. I drive home.
Holy crap.
I would have felt long before that.
Oh, yeah.
And here's a side story to that story. When I had my groceries and I was first walking out of the grocery store, right? Before I had gone home, there was this like homeless looking guy in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And he comes up to me, he approaches me. I'm like, oh, God damn it. Every fucking time.
Yeah.
Comes up to me and he goes, listen, I'm not going to ask you for money. I just need a few groceries. And he named like vinegar and like 2 or 3 other items. And I was like, you know what? I don't even care if this guy's going to buy drugs. That was so creative. And he didn't just ask me for money. I gave him $5 for his goddamn groceries.
Yeah.
I got in my car. I went home. And that's when I realized I forgot the card.
Oh, my God.
Came back in my underwear, like I said. Went back in the store in my underwear.
Yeah.
Went to the service desk. Now, as I was at the service desk in my underwear, I saw the same guy.
Okay.
I saw the homeless guy. He was in the grocery store with, by the way, his little bag of groceries.
He actually bought it.
With my $5. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That never happened.
It was so cute.
I thought you were going to say he saw you and he went, here, take this back. You need this more than I do.
Yeah. Something like that.
No. But in the initial interaction, when I gave him the $5, he had said, God is going to bless you. And I said, you know what? I don't really think so. I don't believe in God. He goes, you know what? I don't either. So when I came back to the store, I'm in the service line and I'm basically nude. And he's there complaining to the manager. He doesn't see me. He's got his little bag of groceries and he's complaining. I want to lodge a complaint about one of the employees here was extremely rude to me. I get my card back from the service desk. I'm standing there in my underwear and I hear this. I'm overhearing this because I was treated very rudely by this employee, and I just want you to know that they were rude to me. And I interrupted him. I said, excuse me, sir, do you remember me? I said, he gave me that $5. I said, this is your God making sure that your day is evened out. I did something nice to you, and now someone else did something shitty to you. There's your God. There's your God making your day even at the end of the day. Now the universe is back in balance. And he looks at me at the end, and he goes, where the hell are your clothes? And I said, God took them. And I walked
Who looks crazier in that one, Mike?
I just walked out.
Yeah, I'm not sure. The jury's out on that one.
Walked out in my underwear.
Oh my God.
Dude, only you, man. Only you. I can't believe it.
Dude, honestly, how do I not get arrested?
Dude, I don't know.
I don't know how you get away with this.
That is crazy, man.
You know what? As crazy as it was when you realized you didn't have the card, I'm sure it didn't feel half as bad as when you did that other thing at the Acme when you went to the urinal and you left your keys on the urinal.
Oh, Scott, do you know that story?
No, I don't think so.
I guess it was about a year ago. I went to that same Acme.
They love you there, I bet.
Oh, they just want to be there. I go in there nude and everything.
I think so, they probably, it sounds like, and I'll let you tell your story, Dave, but I have a feeling by the time you walked in there in your underwear, they expected that from you. That's what I'm guessing.
And it's weird. It's weird how that whole story unfolded. It happened in stages. So, like, each stage, I was able to accept what's going on. You know what I mean?
It's just a little further.
I accepted that I was going to walk to the card.
Right? You went deep.
So, and then once I accepted that, it's not a far cry to accept getting in the car, right? Yeah. And it's not a far cry to accept going to the grocery store and walking 2 feet to the... And then once I'm there, and it's not there, it's not a far step to walk into the... It all happened in stages.
Yeah, you went deep. You took it all the way. And you got the card.
And I got the card.
I'm sorry, though. But yeah, the keys.
Yeah, this other time I was in Acme and I had to pee. So I went in the public bathroom there. And I always put, I don't know why I do this, instead of putting the keys in my pocket, I put them on the toilet back. I put them on the back of the toilet. Mm. And this particular time I forgot and I left them there.
Oh.
And I continued to do my shopping. And when I was checking out, which is about 15 minutes later, I was like, fuck. Where are my keys? And I finally dawned on me. I left them in the bathroom. Well, I walked back in the bathroom and they were gone. And the first thing, and this is a sad commentary on humanity, the first thing I thought of was to not go to the service desk, but to go to the parking lot. And I did, and I'll be goddamned if my SUV wasn't gone.
What?
Whoever found those keys went in that bathroom after me, grabbed those keys, immediately thought to go to the parking lot and just hit the button to see what car lit up, and took my SUV with my work computer in the back with all my meal plans, all my workouts, all everything.
I do remember seeing that on social media then. Man, that's rough.
It was awful. Awful.
Let me mention something at this point. By the way, for people who go to the gym and leave their keys on the rack, like they have a rack of hooks sometimes.
Yeah.
It is so easy for someone to grab your keys and do the same thing, walk right out into the parking lot and just keep pressing the button until they find your car and leave with it. And it happens. Never leave your keys on that rack.
No, that's awful. And I could not convince the cops once they showed up. I couldn't convince them that my house was in jeopardy because, like, I live 5 minutes from there. And it's very easy for them to, like, look in my glove compartment, get my address, go there with the house key, right? Go in there and rob the place. And they were convinced that wasn't going to happen.
Load your SUV up.
The cop was like, yeah, you know, that's it's very, very unlikely. I said, I don't care if you think it's unlikely. Just, could you please send a cop to that house?
Yeah.
It's 5 minutes away. And they just wouldn't do it.
Wow.
He didn't care. I could not make him care.
Huh.
Jesus.
Crazy.
So I had to stay away from that Acme.
Yeah, right.
I honestly can turn a very simple shopping spree into an adventure where I end up in my underwear in the grocery store.
I guess so. I thought that the homeless guy was going to get scared of you or something. It reminded me, and I told this story once a long time ago in one of the shows. I want to retell it quickly because I feel that you will appreciate this, Dave. Mm-hmm. I was going to the night show for one of my contests, and my girlfriend was driving. I was in the passenger seat, and we needed to stop and get gas. And at the time, all of the Detroit shows were held at this place called the Redford Theater. And I don't know why they held the shows there, but like I've had Mike Davies on. We talked about the Redford Theater. People would get their cars broken into parking. Is he peeing?
I think he is.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
This is what you get.
This is what you get.
listening.
I don't feel comfortable telling him a story, Mike, while he's peeing. Is it just me, Mike?
Wait, dude. The least you could have done was sit down and make it a quiet pee, so we could never have known. Instead, you're peeing like a horse on a tin roof.
Right.
Just keep talking. All you had to do was keep talking. No one would have noticed. I would have gotten away with it.
You got rattled like the first time when my band was playing when we were kids.
Yeah.
And a fight broke out, and we stopped playing. And that is a rule. If you're the band and a fight breaks out in a bar, you do not stop playing.
No kidding.
It makes it worse. Well, we didn't know that.
No kidding.
And we got rattled and we stopped playing, and that's what you just did.
This was my fault. This is all my fault.
You should have been like, I'm on a podcast with Dave Pulcinella. I'm lucky that he's only peeing. It could be worse. I'm gonna take it. I'm gonna roll with it, and I'm just gonna, you know what? Just ignore it. But no, now everyone knows.
All right. So back to the story. We were driving back to the night show, and we had to stop to get gas. And in this whole area it's a bad neighborhood, pretty much. And I get out of the car and I'm pumping the gas, and who was obviously a crackhead, this woman's walking up to us, and you could tell she's going to ask us for money. And I've got this old hoodie on. It's my traditional hoodie that I always wear for my contest once I got the tan on and everything. And I honestly, it's like the oldest piece of clothing I own. I don't have it anymore. Actually, I threw it away because it was just so like ratted up and thin. And as she's walking over to me, and remember, I'm like all painted up in pro tan and my face is all sunken in, and I have the hoodie up. And when she gets about 7-8 feet away, I look up at her and our eyes met. She literally stopped walking where she stood. She stopped walking. She turned around and walked the other way. Didn't say a word.
You probably look like a ghoul from hell.
Yeah, she didn't know what was going on, but she knew, like, I don't know what this guy's deal is, but I think I out-crazied her.
That really, really worked in your favor, didn't it?
It was good.
And P.S., that just goes to show you what the general public thinks about a contest-ready bodybuilder.
Have you ever walked into like a grocery store because you needed a last-minute item, like all painted up?
Yes!
It's weird.
That was back when they used Dioderm, which, if you remember, at first goes on green.
No kidding.
Yes.
I never used that. That's before my time.
It's green for a little while before it turns brown.
So it was green at the time?
So I've walked into places looking like I was painted like the Hulk.
Wow.
Huh. Awful. And then when it wears off in patches, and you look like you have leprosy.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's awful.
Well, I'm recovering here on so many levels right now. Just from, first of all, I truly laughed so hard at the card story. I wasn't expecting it to go there. And then
the things
that happened after that, which I'm not even going to say. What else is going on? I'm still trying to catch up with you. And all I've heard is a story about the card.
Well, I got to tell you, Sunday morning, I got to tell you this because I was thinking about you when I did it. Because I am the six foods that work guy.
Yes.
But I did something that I've never done in my life.
Huh.
I woke up Sunday morning, and I had a few drinks on Saturday night, so I just woke up and I was like, I just didn't want eggs and oatmeal for breakfast. I just didn't. Now, mind you, I have had eggs and oatmeal for breakfast every morning of my life for probably the last, 25 years?
You're kidding. Easily. Every morning.
Easily. Oh, yeah. I haven't skipped a day.
Like there's no sometimes I do pancakes because I really wanted them.
Yes, but they're made out of egg whites and oatmeal. They're protein pancakes, so they're made out of egg whites and oatmeal. Huh. Egg whites and oatmeal I've had for my meal one every day of my life for 25 to 30 years, except for Sunday. I woke up and I had such a craving, and Michael knows this because I texted him as I was doing this. I said, "You're not going to believe this, dude, but I'm doing
it." I didn't
this.
Believe it.
He didn't believe it.
Huh.
I actually ordered a large pepperoni and cheese stromboli.
What?
As soon as the place opened, by the way, because they opened at 10 a.m.
Yeah.
So I was like, I called at 9:55. I was starving. a large pepperoni and cheese stromboli, and two cheesesteaks.
Dude, did that fuck your day up?
It made my day.
That would fuck me up for 2 days.
Right, right.
Did not. And here's the thing. As not used to that as I am, I thought it would fuck me up. I was ready for my next meal when it came around. I had no problem with that. I digested it, used it, I was ready for meal number two, and the rest of the day we went to plan. But it was so amazingly satisfying. And it's really not cheating because I do have one cheat meal every week, but I never put it at breakfast. Eats that for breakfast?
Yeah, that would like screw me up. I would have a hard time, like, because I know that I don't know what you do with your people, but the people I work with, because I don't want them to screw up their whole day, I tell them, have your cheat meal. One of the reasons is have your cheat meal toward the end of the day, replacing one of your last meals.
And I always tell people that too. And I totally broke my own rule. And it just didn't matter. It was the most amazing breakfast I've had in a while.
Were you able to like go back on plan?
As of meal two, I was back on plan. Huh. But the weird thing was I actually woke up craving those specific things.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, I said, you know what? I said, self, for 30 years, you've been eating things based on what you're supposed to at a specific time and a specific amount because it's what's on the paper and it's what you're supposed to do. Very rarely, if ever, have I ever said, I crave this, therefore, ergo, I'm going to eat that.
Hmm.
And that's exactly what I did on Sunday.
And you didn't believe this, Mike.
No, I didn't. And I said to him, I said, Dave, let's just do it. Let's just give up on this fitness craze. Let's just get fat. Look, we've spent our lives up to this point, more than half our lives, being fit. Let's spend the second half being fat and really enjoy it. Come on, man.
I went with it for like 30 seconds and I said, I can't do that.
I couldn't do it either.
I can't be the fitness industry being a fat slob.
Oh, there are plenty of people are.
I don't think people will listen to me. Absolutely, they really absolutely are.
Yeah, this is podcasting. You can look any way you want.
Yeah, I can do this, but I'm not getting paid for this.
That's a good point. But you could get the people. Oh, okay. I was going to say, I guess they would eventually find your Instagram, and then they would see you. So,
my nutritionist is fat.
Yeah. Yeah, like you said, Mike, it wouldn't be the first time, right?
No, not at all.
Mm-mm, no.
So,
I mean, that's kind of what's going on. I don't know if you've seen my Facebook today, but my mother has been going through all these old pictures. So she has like a picture of me. She gives me a bath in the sink. I was like 15 years old at the time. No, I'm just kidding. So pictures from like the 80s, the 90s, 2000s. And it was really weird. I kind of wanted to talk to you about this and Mike, get your input on this as well. Looking at those pictures made me realize that I've had in my life about 7 or 8 separate and distinct lives that were unique to themselves, like a completely different mate that I was with, a significant other, completely different group of friends that I hung out with and people who were close to me, things I did, places I lived, my routine. I've had like 7 or 8 like completely different lives. And they were all distinctly different from one another, but they all added up to who making me who I am today. But seeing those pictures, like, I'm not that person anymore. Huh. I'm not this person anymore. I'm not even close to resembling that person that I was in 1982. Who is that? I'm looking at that person. I'm like, who is that? Have you guys ever had that feeling?
I've thought about that a lot over the years, and especially recently because I was talking to Lynn, my current girlfriend, and definitely the one I'm going to go out with this time, all the way out. That she says to me, because I met her when she's in her 40s and I was in my 50s, and she has said to me, I wish we would have met earlier, and had more time together.
Mm.
And I have to say, I said, I don't know if you would have liked me at other eras of my life, or if we would have connected in the way that we did, because we connected in the way that we did because of, as Dave said, who I am right now. But who I am right now has a lot to do with what I've gone through, especially in the last 10 years through my 40s and early 50s. A lot of stuff happened, relationship-wise especially, that has informed me in a way that I didn't have that information in my 20s and 30s for sure. And I just don't know if I would have appreciated her the way I do right now had I met at an earlier age? Because I was a different person.
Probably not.
Different person.
It was meant to happen now. It wouldn't have worked at any other time in your life.
I don't think so. I really don't think so. But do you know why our mother is going through all those photographs? Do you know what she said to me?
Yeah, she said it. She said it in the group text, Mike. It was really upsetting, actually.
She said, "I'm putting together the photographs I want you to use for my wake."
Ooh.
Now, my mother's, she's older. She's coming up on 80, but she's not sickly by any
means. She is in perfect health. I don't know why she said that.
By the way, last New Year's Eve, I was home and in my pajamas by 11 o'clock. I had gone to a party. And then I look on Instagram, and my mother is out with her husband dancing.
No kidding.
That happens to me two or three times a week.
Right.
She's out dancing.
That's our mother. She's
that's badass.
Very, very cool. Very, very active. But then again, at the same time, she's going through the old photos preparing for her funeral. Hmm. And I said, are you serious?
Know something we don't know, Mike?
No, I just think she's thinking about mortality. I mean, how can you not when you're almost 80 years old?
Yeah. I think about it now, you know?
Me too.
I do. I mean, I can imagine, you know, I know myself and how crazy I am. I feel like when I'm that age, I'm just going to be thinking like every day, will this be the day that I wake up with my terminal illness? You know what I mean? It's like, cause my body wasn't designed to be here and here I am. So what's going to go wrong? When's it going to happen? I don't think I'm going to be able to sleep past 75.
Probably not.
This is like totally off topic, but you got me to look at your Facebook and also our questions are there, which we'll get to a little later. Look at this guy that he posted, he tagged you in it, Eric Abalon. Is that his name?
Yes.
Freaking,
yes.
What's up with his quads? So he's 176.8 pounds, mm-hmm. small waist, not mm-hmm. huge up top, mm-mm. but the dude has got some crazy wheels.
I approached him on the gym floor about a month and a half ago, and I said, dude, I never do this. I said, but I'm approaching you because I, first of all, want to know, do you compete? He said, no.
Yeah.
I said, have you ever thought about it? He goes, I've thought about it. I just never done it. This dude, I got to tell you, his genetics are crazy. So I got him to do a consultation with me.
Okay.
And he came in and we went through everything, you know, how he trains and what he eats. I shit you not. When he wrote down his daily food intake, he eats, I've never seen anything like it, ground beef, white rice, and broccoli for every meal.
Okay.
Of every day. And has for months and months and months and months.
Huh. So he's focused.
I said, Eric, if you can do that, you can do anything.
Wow.
I said, it's not good that you're doing that. I said, but if you can do that, you can do anything. I mean, it's the same meal. Like I thought I was bad with the six foods that work. He's like the three. He's like the three foods that work.
Yeah.
So I believe anything's possible. So he signed up with me for an off-season protocol. I'm going to get him up to 190 lean.
Nice.
And just go from there. But look at it. You see his genetics. Dude, it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
The lower body.
Has he been training a long time? Like what's his deal with legs? Like, is he just like a fanatic with squats or?
You know what? He just grows real easily in the lower body. He trains everything equally.
Okay.
But you know, it's one of those genetic things where his legs just blow up.
Wow.
And he's natural, which is amazing.
Whew. Well, huge shout out to him. I hope he hears this.
Huge, huge shout out to him. And I'm looking forward to working with him. We haven't started yet, but I'm developing his plan this week. And we will be, the wheels will be turning as of next week.
Hell yeah.
So we'll see what we can do.
Keep us all posted.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I want to see what goes on with that.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
So you asked us, well, you asked me, you were like, hey, I want to talk about this Kai Greene video. And so I watched it while I was doing my cardio. I know Mike saw 7 minutes of it.
Dude, I mean, all I can say is what the fuck is up with this guy?
So he was at, was this in Dubai? I believe so. And this is with Dave Palumbo. It's an RX Muscle video. We'll link it in the comments if you guys want to check it out, if you haven't seen it.
When the passion goes and you find yourself in another place where your youth is gone and the other things that you took for granted that were incredibly valuable, There'll be no one to blame but you if you did not use what you had when you had it.
But yeah, so what were you thinking here about this?
I started to watch it because I have always liked Kai.
Yeah.
Although I thought he was way too verbose and, you know, he never gets to the point, but I liked him and he meant well. Now, I don't see it that way anymore. I think it's gotten to the point where he feels that he's been burnt by the IFBB so badly that he just won't answer any of Dave's questions. He just won't answer them.
No.
And every one of them reeks. Every one of his half-assed answers reeks of bitterness and resentment.
I hear that.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, he just won't come out and say what Dave is asking. And he's always kind of been like that. But it's gotten so bad. And like Dave asked him three separate times in three separate ways if Kai thought that Phil should have and deserved to lose the Olympia. It's really a simple question that deserves a simple answer. He just wouldn't do it. Dude, he wouldn't do it. Mike, you watched? Did you watch that part, Mike?
I did. I like I said, I watched the first 7 minutes. I couldn't take it. And then I ended up skipping around through it. Mm-hmm. I pretty much sampled the rest of it. I'll tell you what my take is on several parts of that. The first part where Dave was trying to get him to say if he was going to compete at the Olympia, the deal, it was about money.
Mm. I know
that. It was about the deal. They hadn't finalized the deal. And I'm telling you, I don't think he wants to do it unless he's going to get a good deal, whether or not he wins or loses.
Which is fine. Let me interrupt. Which is why Dave shifted the question to, okay, I get that. You know, it's about the money. Okay, so let me put it this way, he says. Does Kai Greene still have the fire in him to want to win another Olympia? That's a fair question that has nothing to do with the conversation or the deal or the negotiation of the contract.
All right,
and he wouldn't answer that either.
Well, there's two things I think going on there. One is he may not and doesn't want to admit that because then if he gets the deal, he's going to have to act as if he does.
Hmm.
Wow. Okay.
But the other thing is, as I think, and as I've watched his career after he's left Muscle Muds and after I've stopped working with him, I think he's let this bodybuilder philosopher thing go to his head a little bit. And I think he has taken it too far.
I agree.
I think he thinks it's expected of him to have these cosmic answers to everything. And sometimes simplicity is better. It's just a better way to go. And he can't do that anymore. If I was in his camp, I would advise him to simplify your answers and fucking answer a question. In a satisfying way.
All he needs to do is look at the comments under that video, and he'll realize he's losing fans.
What did you hear?
Every comment under that video was like, what a douchebag, what an asshole. Just answer the fucking question. Why does he always have to dance around the quiz? God damn, answer the fuck. Everybody. So it's like no one's digging it anymore. It's not cute anymore.
At one time, it was inspirational to talk about, you know, the things that you think you manifest in your life, and we get that.
Uh-huh, right.
But now it's just annoying, and I think he's taken it too far. It doesn't mean he has to abandon it. I just think he needs to tighten. And look, I've said this to Kai's face years ago when we were working together. He told me his ultimate goal was to be on The Tonight Show, on The Letterman Show at that time. And I said to him, well, you're going to have to get your life story down to a tight 2 to 3 minutes.
Mm.
You're going to have to figure out a way to boil this thing down, this message you have, to a good 2 or 3 minutes. And he said, I said that directly to him on the phone, exactly like that. And he was like, I know. Well, I think he's going in the opposite direction.
Hmm.
And I would suggest to his management that you try to get him to start to condense things and be sharper and more focused rather than all over the place, because it's not satisfying and people will tune out. They don't want to listen to these 20-minute rants anymore about, you know, cosmic stuff that maybe even they agree with.
Yeah.
Well, that's the other thing that the comments were saying. A lot of the comments said, oh, I made it 5 minutes in, or I made it 7 minutes in, and then I had to bail. Like, no one's watching it. No one's going to watch it.
Yeah, it's counterproductive.
You guys, both of you bailed. Both of you.
That's what I was going to say. You asked. I mean, the only reason I really sat through it, the majority I did was because I wanted to be able to talk about it tonight. But I watched the first few minutes and then we texted a little bit. So I had to, you know, you go off YouTube and so it stops. And then when I went back, I, you know, scanned seven more minutes in. And I finally I got to the part that you wanted me to hear. And so I listened to that and I watched, listened through the end. But it, and it's a part one. This was to be continued. So this was 30 minutes. This was 30 minutes, and there's going to be another part.
30 minutes of nothing.
It really was.
But, you know, in Kai's defense for talking about Phil Heath, I do know that he never wants to speak negatively about someone. And I admire him for that. He never wants to be on record speaking negatively about someone. So you can assume that he does not think Phil deserved to win. He did not favor Phil's physique this last time out, but he just doesn't want to say it. He doesn't want to say it because he doesn't want to have that imprint somewhere.
I see.
You know, that's what I think.
I didn't know that. You know him better than
That's a good point. That's a good insight.
That's a positive aspect of him. He doesn't want to be a trash talker about anyone ever.
You know, he did make a good point too. When they were talking about Phil, he always does like the third person thing, but he said, you know, that, that you, you push up to reach a certain level of mass. And then, you know, then he was referring to guts. He said, you know, basically I can't reword it the way he did, but basically there was a time that a distended midsection wasn't as big of an issue as it is today. And Phil pushed up to do what he needed to reach the mass level that he needed, but then they changed, they flipped the script on him. And obviously, you know, a lot of people could argue that it was more distended than it, it had been in the past. He's being judged against him, his best self. It was still probably better than other guys, you know, but against his best self, maybe it wasn't as good. Still, they flipped the script and they changed what they wanted.
That's valid, I guess.
That's very valid.
But again, you know, you also brought up the point where he was not as good as he was.
Yeah.
And I, in my opinion, he's been deteriorating for the past 4 years.
Yeah.
Every year he gets worse, I think.
Is he now? Yeah. I thought you would know, Mike.
How old is... Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about Phil Heath. How old is Phil Heath is what I was...
Oh, I'm sorry.
He's not even 40, I don't think.
Really?
Oh, okay.
Phil, I don't think so. He's young.
Okay. I never stopped. Honestly, that's probably terrible of me. I never stopped to think about it. I just assumed he was right around there. Huh? Yeah.
I might be right.
I'm just realizing I have no idea how old Phil Heath is, and I host a bodybuilding show.
you better Google that shit.
I better rethink my position in life, I think, is what I should do.
I was just watching Dave Palumbo suffer through this interview, and I was just glad that it wasn't me in his position.
He's laughing the whole time, you see? He's laughing.
Well, you know what? This is funny because Dave Palumbo worked with Kai Greene before I did. And those were the videos that I saw with Kai Greene that made me think, boy, man, this guy's interesting. I wish somebody could work with him and edit him differently. Because, again, even then, Dave Palumbo had his tongue in his cheek the whole time. He doesn't take him seriously. They went to his apartment in Brooklyn, and they didn't shoot it right. And again, they let him ramble on too long. And this was years ago, and on Muscular Development, I remember thinking, boy, there's a nugget of something here that could really be formed into something great. Craziest thought I ever had, because little did I know a few years later I would be doing that. But now I think we're back to that. I think we're back to just letting Kai go, and Dave Palumbo is like grinning his way through it. I don't think it's the right way to do it.
No, that's exactly what's happening. It's awful.
I think, though, too, that part of it is that the interest isn't there anymore. You know, the interest in trying to develop, you know, the quote-unquote Kai Greene character, it's fading. So I don't think there's going to be as much investment into bringing that out. It might not happen.
Well, you know, I don't know what Kai and his crew are trying to do. If I have to see one more, because I still follow him, I mean, but if I have to see one more slow-motion video of him walking across the Brooklyn Bridge, I'm going to slit my wrists. Because that's all they do is this... You know, overblown music and the narration in the background got cosmic significance, and he's walking across the Brooklyn Bridge. All right, we get it. You're from Brooklyn. What are we going to do now? Let's do something with this.
They're just not.
I hope he doesn't hear this podcast.
I do like him as a person. I really
like him as a person.
And I always have, but I just can't stand what he's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't stand it. It's bad.
I like him too. And I had always stood behind him. Like I was one of the people who, like the early adopters who I saw that Dave Palumbo video, you know, back in the projects and, you know, he was the underdog and I wanted him to win. I remember asking him about those. I told him, you know, I saw those videos, muscular development and he kind of like, I could tell he wasn't very proud of those videos. You know, he was kind of like, well, it's, you know, you see what they wanted you to see is the way he pretty much said it at the time.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think he's proud of the videos he made with me either.
I mean,
he has said, no, in other videos, he has said, you know, that was not, speaking about Overkill, where he went to the Olympia and didn't win. Yeah. He goes, that's not the video I wanted to make.
Oh, really?
I wanted it to be the new Pumping Iron.
Okay.
You know, and that's what I envisioned. So I'm not proud of that thing.
Well, can I tell you something? That's exactly what I wanted when you did Raising the Bar. I wanted it to be exactly Pumping Iron. I wanted everything to be positive. I wanted it to look like the hero. I wanted to win the show. And I didn't want anything bad to happen. And that's not how it went at all. I had to really readjust my thinking.
Yeah.
I really did.
But you were able to, though, and it, and you could recognize at the end of the day that it was the video that was meant to be. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly. I had to accept that.
Yeah. Yeah. I could ask you all sorts of stuff, Mike. All sorts of things, like because there's been so much video out there now, so many new things. You know, all the Generation Iron stuff that's come out. I mean, I feel like we need a guy like you, who's putting this conscientious outsider. Who could give us a good spin?
At this point, though, would they even allow me to tell the real story of what's going on behind the scenes? Or do they want to just put forth the story that they want to put forth?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I just don't know. I just don't know if there's... I think at a certain point, the industry was naive enough and what we were doing was fresh enough that I could do some of the things that I did. I don't know... I think everyone's so self-conscious now and so aware of their persona and of crafting a persona constantly on Instagram and on YouTube. And I just don't think people are natural anymore. Hmm. You know, it's actually a contradiction. There's more cameras and more footage and you're constantly filming yourself and it has made people less natural.
I was thinking that when you were talking about what that people didn't want you to shoot Mike Pulcinella style films of them. I was thinking about, well, because they can shoot what they want now themselves and show us all of that.
Right. Look, we've had athletes sponsored by MHP going to, you know, going through their prep and going to big contests and they would hire their own guys.
Yeah.
Their own buddies to shoot rather than rely on Mike Pulcinella, who has this reputation. Why wouldn't you just turn to, and by the way, because you're sponsored by MHP, you don't have to pay me.
Yeah.
I'm going paid by MHP. It would be free, but they would hire their own guys to make their own documentaries. This has happened several times since I've been on board where guys, they've made their own sort of documentary videos. I think not that good, you know, could have been better, not horrible. But I think could have been better had I had a hand in it. But of course, I would think that. But where does that come from? That comes from them wanting to craft their own image their own way and have a control over it, which if I did it, they wouldn't have that control.
I think to an extent the audience is hip to it in some cases, because I've seen people that are just that. You know, even people that are very successful have really good physiques that have, you know, outstanding communication skills and personalities that have had like just real flat social media presence where it's all just like super positive, super surface, and they don't get the followers that some other people do. I wonder if showing some of that vulnerability could be a tool that people could use in their own self-promotion, but then finding that balance, because I just feel like at the same time, if you took it too far, if I'm filming myself crying and I put that on Instagram, you know, it's going to come off as like really dramatic and self-serving. Well, and that's, you know?
Yes, you're right, because that moment, self-contained, just in and of itself,
yeah,
isn't the whole story, and that's why Instagram isn't the right venue for that sort of thing.
Okay.
That's why something like that would seem like you're feeling sorry for yourself, or you're trying to get sympathy from people. That's why when I shoot something like that and I'm making a documentary, I don't put that right online. I wait for that to turn into something else so that we can contrast, again, where you came from to where you ended up.
Beautiful.
And you have to see that as a whole.
Yeah.
And unless somebody's going to follow you through this entire Instagram, you know, journey, and I guess some do, I just don't think that that's the right way to release it in little bits and pieces. And this has been my gut feeling about social media in general. And it's ironic that I'm a social media guy right now, is that I don't like the instantaneous nature of it. I like shooting for 6 months or however long, and then taking that footage and like going, now what's important? What's not important? Let's restructure this. Let's put it together. But no, everyone wants to say, oh, that's something that happened 6 months ago. That's old news. I don't want to hear about it anymore. I want to know what just happened. What's happening actually instantly right now. Live stream it.
Yeah.
Live stream it. Well, I don't know. Live streaming life is means you're going to be live streaming a lot of boring stuff.
Yeah.
And my task was always to boil it down to the most interesting stuff. That's what I found interesting.
Now, you kind of adopted it a little bit in Raising the Bar 4, which that was the first time I think that I got a chance to podcast with you was right after you began releasing it. It wasn't even totally out yet. But now you did that in segments and you released that directly to YouTube, correct?
Yeah, I did, because Raising the Bar 4 was really kind of, it was a way to utilize a lot of bits and pieces of things that I had shot that really had not found their way into the other three Raising the Bars. Or any of the Kai Greene stuff. I had this a lot of good what I felt like were behind the scenes stuff, and I didn't know how to, and I thought it was worth viewing, but I didn't know how to release it, and so I turned it into a behind the scenes. Raising the Bar 4 is really about the making of the Raising the Bars and all the Kai Greene videos and the Victor Martinez videos. It's about what it took to make those things. So it's. Basically, so it's kind of episodic and it's kind of a little slapdash, like things are sort of all put together. But I just thought it was some material that needed to be seen.
Totally jumping back here for a second, guys. Phil Heath is 38.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
Younger than I thought.
I didn't think he was 40. Yeah.
But mm-hmm.
Can you find out how old Kai is?
How old Kai is.
I'll look it up. But yeah, okay. Sorry. I was looking that up because while you were talking, because I was like, I got to figure that out. But how did you feel about Raising the Bar 4? That's something, because when I talk to you about Raising the Bar 4, it's like while it was happening. And I've wondered about your reflections since then.
I feel like Raising the Bar 4 was more for me than for anyone else.
Okay.
I had to get it out of my system. I had to put that out there. There's also a story in there that's non-bodybuilding related about my best friend, Joe Durney, who died at 47 years old. That's part of the story. And it actually figures into and influences other parts of the story. But I felt like I was doing it for myself. And really, when I put it, and that's why I didn't sell it as a DVD.
Okay.
Or sell it as a download. I just put it out there for free because I felt like I did it for me. If people enjoy it, fine. If not, that's fine too. And yeah. It's got a lot of views. It's got some decent views. But I think mostly from people who have seen the other stuff and kind of just want a little, again, a little behind the scenes look at how some of it was done.
Yeah, I'd always wondered that. Now, have you guys, just out of curiosity, have you guys kept up with Haley McNeff?
I haven't talked to her in a while. No, I haven't.
No,
I've seen her online. She keeps talking about she's going to, you know, start training again and then get big again. But and she's in good shape. She looks great, but I've never seen her. Doesn't seem to be really like getting huge.
I don't think she'll do that ever again.
Beating.
I don't think she'll do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. She was in Raising the Bar 3 and in 4, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And she turned out to be like one of the early women's physique pros. She had a very, I'm going to say, a softer look compared to what they ended up going toward.
This is a person who, you're right about that. And I think this is a person who had what I call the best female bodybuilding face. Probably the best, and this is probably true for males too. People who have very round, sort of chubby faces,
yes.
When they're normal, look great by the time they get on stage.
Yes.
Because it trims them down. People who have quote unquote normal faces, by the time they get on stage, their bodies might look great, but their faces look like a skull.
Yeah.
And it's not attractive. So Hayley McNeff was able to get in reasonable, you know, stage shape, and her face was still cute. And she still was pretty.
Colette Nelson.
She was also 20.
And she was also 20. And there are some men like that too. They still look handsome, and they don't look like a cadaver because when they're off season, their faces swell and they just have these like big round chipmunk cheeks.
Jay Cutler, for instance, he never got Jay too Cutler. Sunken in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? No, he always looked like a handsome guy on stage.
Yeah.
And I think that was her claim to fame. Unfortunately, she really didn't have the heart for the competition.
When it came down to it, she could not do it.
No kidding.
She couldn't. The uncomfortable parts of the sport. All she really wanted to do was put 100-pound plates on the leg press and do quarter reps. Seriously?
Yeah.
But she loved lifting. When it came down to it, she didn't want to do bodybuilding in its competitive form because she hated the dieting. She hated having to get smaller and weaker. She hated dehydration. She hated it all.
Hmm.
At the end of the day, she thought she wanted to be a bodybuilder, but she really didn't. The only part she liked was the lifting weights, which, as you know, is the easy part.
Yeah. Now, okay. Now, I don't know if this is true or not, because I've heard a range in Kai's age, but the internets are telling me he's 43.
I think that's about right.
That sounds about right.
Okay.
From what I know, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't sound
so bad. He's got to do it now or never, then. He really does.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I just from that video, I don't know. I got the vibe he was talking about a fire that he doesn't have anymore, like the past.
I agree.
Well, look, when you've put everything you've had into it, physically and spiritually and psychologically, as he has, and been denied so many times, and felt rightfully or unrightfully, I don't know. But felt that you were being unfairly denied so many times. How do you get up the gumption to do it
Plus,
again?
Plus, I think he's finally realizing, as I did in my last show, that it's not what you thought it was going to be once you get there.
Mm.
He seems really disillusioned.
Yeah.
Really, really bitter. Really let down by the whole thing.
I could see that.
Not to mention the fact that he's now getting acting jobs. And he's branching out in other ways. How exciting is that? How distracting is that?
True.
Well, he needs to not be 290 pounds at 5'8 if he's going to do acting. And he needs to not be 290 pounds at 5'8 any fucking way. He's 42 years old and he's going to drop dead.
Mm.
So if he's not going to do the Olympia, he needs to drop about 80 pounds.
I watched his episodes of Stranger Things.
Me too, me too. Show
Stranger Things? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And I love Stranger Things. That was one of my favorite shows. And to find him on there was the coolest thing. But there was a scene where I think they jump out of a van and they run into a building.
Yeah.
He and his cohorts run into a building. I can't imagine how difficult that was for him to actually do.
Maybe got like a double for that one.
Yeah. Because I worked with a much smaller bodybuilder, and we were trying to do a funny commercial, and I just needed him to jog down the street. And he jogged once down the street, pulled every muscle he had, and was completely out of breath.
Wow, really?
Pretty much.
That's awful.
Man.
Awful.
Well, do we have anything else? Because we also have questions.
No, we don't. I'll tell you what. We've been going an hour and 40 minutes, and I got to be honest with you. I don't have the brain power to really throw myself into answering these questions.
Oh.
So I'm asking, can we save it till next week?
We can save it.
Plus, listen, Mike being here, I think what we talked about, the stuff we talked about, was very conducive to Mike being here. And the questions, he's not going to be able to contribute much anyway.
Not really.
Mike, what do you know about stem cells? Go.
Zero.
Mike bands, yeah, chains,
I think
go.
It's probably better for you guys to do, you know, to answer the questions, maybe get some more questions for next week. I can't add much to that.
All right. Yeah. Fair enough.
Are we in agreement?
Fair enough. I am in agreement if you guys are in agreement.
Yeah.
I'm fine with it.
All right.
And that way I'll be more fresh for the questions, and we won't feel like Mike's just sitting on the sidelines.
I like that idea. I think that's good. Plus, we got a chance to bring Mike in. Mike, would you come back and do this with us again sometime?
I would, if, as long as there's topics you think I can weigh in on, absolutely.
All right.
You can talk about almost anything, dude. You're so versatile.
I like that. Really,
except I can't answer specific questions about
chains,
you know,
and bands.
You know, right? No,
exactly. Well, you know what? That kind of gives us room. Then we could do episodes where we bring Mike in, and then we could do episodes where we do questions. We could do whatever we want, really. I mean, really, we have free reign, you know?
I think that's a great idea.
The network supports that.
And the other reason I'm kind of glad we're wrapping it up is because I have had to pee so bad.
Well, you just go, Dave, Mike.
Yeah.
I'm not free to roam like you are with the telephone. I'm tethered to my computer, and I'm dying over here.
You need a Gatorade bottle.
For you, don't it?
I do.
Why didn't I think of that? Oh.
Well, Mike, while you're here, we talked about it a little bit, before, but please plug everything that you're doing. And guys, if you don't have a pen and paper, I'm going to put all the stuff in the show notes. So definitely, I want you all to go check out Mike and check out everything he's doing with MHP too. First of all, yeah. MHP, tell me a little bit more about your tie with them. Can people like directly find the stuff that you are doing with their social media?
Absolutely. Yeah. Follow MHP on Instagram and Facebook. We're releasing, you know, a lot of stuff about the products, of course, if you're interested in that. But little helpful videos with and fun videos with the athletes. There's always something going on the MHP social media. That's definitely something people should follow.
So is that you? Like if I go to MHP I comment? Oh, okay. All right.
Pretty much.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, if you're into using supplements, we're always running specials and things like that, you know, $5 off, 15% off. So that's another good reason to go onto the social media. And we're always trying to make sales and do things like that.
All right. And I'm sorry, what's that? The at, is it at MHP?
At MHP Strong USA.
Okay.
The Instagram and MHP Strong, official MHP Strong on Facebook.
Okay. I'm writing that down for myself. And then your personal stuff?
Yeah, my personal stuff. I do have a website, MikePulsinella.com, where you can download Raising the Bar 1, 2, and 3. And on my YouTube page is all kinds of stuff that I've been posting for years, and including some new stuff, some really nice. We got Chris Bumstead and Victor Martinez to hang out and just do an arm workout together. And they had a really nice rapport. Huh. And again, I sort of shot it in a sort of documentary style, but it's a lot of great information from the veteran Victor passing down to Bumstead. And they had such a great time, and it was really lighthearted and fun, but also a lot of great information. That's on my Mike Pulsinella YouTube page. I just put it up recently.
No kidding. And where was that at?
More stuff like that. Yeah.
Where was that at? Yeah.
It was shot at Retro Fitness in Fairfield, New Jersey, which is real close to the MHP offices.
No kidding. So do you live out that way?
Yeah. Yeah. I live only about 20 minutes from there.
Okay.
MHP is in Caldwell, New Jersey, and I live in Montclair.
I've never been over there, guys. Like, I've never been to Jersey and New York and all that. I've never seen that.
It's there are some really nice areas, and I love where I'm at because I'm only, you know, 30, 45 minutes from New York City. All kinds of great shows.
Where are you, Scott?
I am in Detroit.
Okay.
Yeah,
Michigan.
So, yeah, Michigan. I'm not like in the city. I'm in the suburbs of Detroit, halfway between Detroit and Ann Arbor. But yeah, I've never been that way. I've been all sorts of places out west, a little bit east, but yeah, never in your guys' neck of the woods.
Do you like it where you are?
It's okay. You know, it's good. It's a lower cost of living, which is nice, you know, especially with that's my overhead really. I work from home. So it's, you know, and we have good gyms here and good people. It gets cold in the wintertime, but you know, I grew up here. I moved out west for several years. And I missed my family, and I wanted to come back at that point in my life. I could see myself leaving again, and I don't know if I could see like New York, New Jersey. I don't know if that could be me, but then again, I've never been there, so that's why I'm curious.
It's extremely dense here.
Yeah,
you know, there's a high population and a lot of traffic, and you have to be used to that sort of thing. You have to get used to that sort of thing. It's very, it can be a big culture shift.
Is that the kind of thing, too, where, like, you can take a subway from where you're at to New York, or no?
Yeah. There's trains that run. There's a train station right outside the door, almost, and it takes you right to right to New York eventually, if you know the connections. Yeah,
that's all super foreign to me. There's a lot of great bodybuilding out that way too.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's why we're located here, because there's a lot of bodybuilding, a lot of bodybuilders in this area, in Connecticut, up that way.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no kidding.
Boston and all that whole area.
Is there anything else that we haven't mentioned?
Not that I can think of.
All right. Dave?
Not that I can think of either, bro.
All right. I think this turned out good. I like this.
I've had a blast. I've had a blast tonight.
I can't freaking believe that story about the card.
That's me. This is what you get when you do a podcast with Dave Pulsanala. Sorry.
All right. Well, guys listening at home, when we post this show, Dave's going to post it. I'm going to post it. Mike will probably post it. Any of those threads, post your next questions. We've got a good handful. We can build a show. Basically, we can build a show out of Dave getting a card at the grocery store.
We don't
need your questions.
Right, we don't need them. Right?
Apparently. We can build a show out of anything. Apparently. Right. But we do want your questions. And we want to get your feedback. So this is a brand new show. We're still feeling it out. We're still figuring out what we want to do. And it's going to keep evolving and growing each episode. And we want you guys to be a part of it. So, Dave, Mike, I don't think I messed your names up once today. And I'm really surprised by that.
Not even once. I'm kind of disappointed.
Oh, you know, I was supposed to do a live commercial. Remember?
Oh, we didn't even go to commercial. Time. Yeah, we didn't even go to.
I'll do it next time.
All right. That sounds good. All right, guys. In that case, for another episode of The Pulse of Bodybuilding and Fitness with Dave Pulsanella and Mike Pulsanella, I'm Scott McNally for the Advices Radio Network. We will see you next time.
Advices Radio Network.